Welcome back to the U.S. Naval History Podcast. I'm your host, Chase Dalton. So recently I got an email from someone named Spencer, and he asked a couple of good questions on the World War II island hopping campaign and how that relates to the South China Sea and to the U.S. and China today. And so I thought that I would read back his email and the answer that I sent to him. And just as a reminder, usnavalhistorypodcast@gmail.com, I try to answer every single email I get, and who knows, in the future maybe your email will get turned into a short episode. And so Spencer's question was, in one of your recent episodes concerning the late 20th/21st century events in the South China Sea, you mentioned that the PLA is turning disputed reefs and artificial islands into, quote, unsinkable aircraft carriers. And so my answer to that part is yes. As I'm sure you're aware, this term was taken from World War II, first referring to the Japanese-held islands, and later to the bases that the U.S. long-range bombers were based off of. This unsinkable aircraft carrier strategy didn't work out too well for Japan because, as it turns out, their limiting factor was not carrier production, but plane production. And the Japanese ability, or inability as it turned out, to supply their bases strewn out across the Pacific. The benefit of an unsinkable aircraft carrier is best realized if having your carriers sunk is your major/limiting concern. And towards the end of World War II, and here you can listen to the World War II Part 3 episode that I have early on the feed, where I go through all of U.S. naval history chronologically. The Japanese had so few planes that they were using empty carriers for bait for the U.S. strike force while their surface ships went in for the kill. And so all of this just goes to show that the unsinkable nature of an island only matters some of the time, and that some of the time works best when the islands are dense enough to be mutually supported. This is when the unsinkable aircraft carrier strategy worked best for Japan, and it wasn't really until the second half of the Pacific War that we, the United States, had the critical mass of aircraft carriers to roll back their mutually supporting islands effectively. The bad news is that the South China Sea is dense enough to where Chinese airstrips could be mutually reinforcing, and so in the event of a war, I expect that they would be used to hold U.S. assets farther away from China and from Taiwan. And this would force us to adopt the rollback strategy of World War II, which China hopes, I believe, will take long enough to where they get to fait accompli. Spencer's second part asks, I've heard this concept all over the place, and is often suggested that these remote air bases are superior to, or at least have some advantages over U.S. Navy CVNs, that's carriers, because they are relatively invulnerable from things like subs and hypersonic anti-ship cruises and ballistic missiles. And so my answer to that is, in general, you would rather have a carrier in a battle, but an island is a lot cheaper and easier to repair. Plus, you're right, they can't be sunk. A quick mental pro and con list, which is probably far from exhaustive, of islands versus carriers. So the pros of islands is that they are easier to repair once bombed. They require fewer men to launch and recover an equivalent number of planes. They are easier to defend because they have a lot of room for anti-aircraft guns, etc. The logistics are simpler, assuming that you have sea control. They can't be sunk, as I mentioned. They need less frequent resupply if they are properly stocked, because there's just more room to put water and food and stuff like that. They are way cheaper to achieve the same combat effectiveness at a given point. But that being said, how often is this point relevant? And on the logistics, China has them. And I'm going to read now from a slide that's been circulating. It's unclassified from ONI, the Office of Naval Intelligence, talking about PLAN versus USN naval force laydown. And so on this slide, they have a pretty harrowing little graphic which shows all of the tonnage that Chinese shipbuilders versus U.S. shipbuilders can build. And they have some scary-looking graphs on battle fleet size, which showed the Chinese having a bigger battle fleet of ships and submarines. And I'm going to read the text, which says, PLAN surface ship producers are mixed military/commercial. It says, most PLAN-associated construction completed in CSSC facilities, and CSSC stands for China State Shipbuilding Corporation, which means basically they are owned and directed by the state. It's a state-run company. The next bullet point, commercial profit/national investment in facilities, reduced overhead. Basically, there are economies of scale when you're building ships at scale, such as the Chinese are doing. modern design software, machinery, and capital improvements. It's really hard to invest in all of that if you do not have a commercial shipbuilding industry such as the United States does not. Leverage commercial shipbuilding technology, license production. So basically, China is able to use what they learn and the workforce, et cetera, from their commercial shipbuilding on military shipbuilding. So that gives them a huge production advantage. China is also the world's leading shipbuilder by a large margin. China controls approximately 40% of global commercial shipbuilding versus the U.S. 0.5%, so not good. They have 75-plus, quote, notable commercial ship construction facilities, 20 of which support naval construction programs, so 20 shipyards basically that produce naval vessels versus far fewer for the United States. And China has 50-plus dry docks that they could physically accommodate an aircraft carrier. And I don't even want to know what the U.S. number is, but much smaller than that. And so that is pretty gross, effectively. Pretty darn gross. And so all of that just talks about how China is not going to be logistically limited, and during an attritional war, it's going to be bad for the United States. Going to the cons of an island, though, I just talked about the pros of an island, is that an island can't move, obviously. And this means, for example, that even if you stalk a given island with a super heavy air wing, say twice normal carrier air complement, it'll still be overwhelmed for a day when three carriers converge on it, destroying the base. An island can be isolated, which traps the assets on an island in that island. And this did happen to Japan, where they had some islands cut off. Their planes just couldn't reach the fight, and they just ended up sitting there in the sun at the end of the war. You have to resupply the island regularly, and so if the enemy controls the sea or has a decent commerce rating, aka submarine force, that island is done for, and the islands become a big burden. Whereas a carrier can move, they can resupply far from the enemy, they resupply in restricted areas. An island is easy to find. Everybody knows exactly where that island is. It's not moving. The enemy knows right where to hit you, which is not the case with carriers. Carriers are actually still, even in today's day and age, hard to find a ship that does not want to be found at sea. And I'm sure I'll think of more pros and cons 10 seconds after I finish recording, but these are just a few off-the-cuff thoughts. And so in conclusion, Spencer asks, the only reasonable conclusion that I can come up with, is Spencer again, so far, is that the concentration of forces is the primary concern in this situation, with China's assumedly far larger number of proximate Pacific bases allowing for a greater degree of dispersion than the U.S. Air Force and Navy are able to achieve. Is there something I'm missing here? So my answer is essentially no. Close by bases do help a lot. It alleviates the concern about isolated bases and isolated planes. The grouping of bases also allow planes to hop from base to base to achieve local air power concentration, which is really what matters. Who cares about how many planes you have in total? What really matters is how many you have at the battle, when the battle is taking place. And the South China Sea is a lot smaller than the gigantic South and West Pacific theaters of World War II. And in addition, plane ranges have increased a lot since World War II, making the islands relatively more valuable. But still, planes are incredibly intensive industrial goods and represent the vast majority of World War II industrial output. Tanks and guns are comparatively much more easy and less industrially intensive, whereas planes and, you know, today missiles are hard and were hard back in World War II as well. And that being said, planes are a lot more complex than missiles, and I'm going to make a very strong assumption that the DoD has a lot of war plans for exactly where a bunch of Tomahawks will go in the event of war. And if we trade 3-to-1 Tomahawks to PLA AF planes, it's probably still going to be a very good deal in either a short and hot conflict or a war of attrition scenario. But simultaneously, I wouldn't count out the number of bases that the U.S. has or will have access to. The Philippines may play ball. Japan will likely join us in the fight, according to Rear Admiral Studeman when I had him on the podcast a couple episodes ago. And we have our own island bases, such as in Guam. And so my concluding thoughts on the unsinkable aircraft carrier question is that World War II unsinkable carriers proved to be more of unsinkable supply depots, which we, the United States, needed as we hopped across the Pacific. At the end of the war, the fact that we had islands within long-range bomber range made it possible to, quite frankly, burn Japan to the ground. Carrier-based planes were much smaller, and the logistics of doing all that bombing from the sea would have been much more expensive would have been much more difficult, would have been much slower, it would have been much more dangerous. The end result would have been that Japan would have been bombed far less before atomic bombs got dropped, but also that they probably, and here I'm getting a bit more speculative, would have surrendered later and probably been split into a USSR, US client state like Europe and Korea were. And so it's probably for the best that they got obliterated in that manner, as absolutely grim as that sounds and the reality on the ground was. The value of islands today, overall, I don't think they're going to be defining, but they're certainly extremely helpful and a good Taiwan invasion delaying tactic, if that's what it comes down to for the Chinese. And for each dollar that the PLA puts into these islands, we are probably going to have to spend many dollars countering that. And so it's a really good asymmetric bet for the Chinese. So that's all. If you are listening to this, please let me know what I forgot on the pro and cons list. Let me know if you have any other thoughts. Send me your emails at usnavalhistorypodcast@gmail.com. That email address is also in the show description. Who knows, you might get featured on one of these episodes. Spencer, thank you very much for the email. And as always, everybody, please rate, subscribe, share with your friends, etc. Write me a great review on Apple Podcasts. I always love to see that, unless it's a bad one. In that case, I don't like to see it. So don't write me a review then. Until next time, fair winds and following seas.
Forgot to do my ORM, now I'm going home.
No. Forgot to do my ORM, and now I'm going home.
Oh, Lord, I want to stay.
Oh, Lord, I want to stay.
Big Navy says no way.
Big Navy says no way.
Oh, hey.
Oh, hey.
I'm a steamroller, baby.
I'm a steamroller, baby.
Just a rolling down the line.
Just a rolling down the line.
I'm a steamroller, baby.
I'm a steamroller, baby.
Just a rolling down the line.
Just a rolling down the line.
So you better get out of my way now.
So you better get out of my way now.
Before I roll right over you.
Before I roll right over you.
Say you better get out of my way now.
You better get out of my way now.
Before I roll right
over you. Before I roll right over you.
It's just a little,
woo!
A little,
hey!
Just a little rock and roll.
It's just a little,
woo!
A little,
hey!
A little rock and roll.
It's just that kind of,
woo!
That kind of,
hey!
That kind of soothes the soul.
It's just the kind of,
hey!
The kind of soothes the soul.